Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan present Point Taken, a podcast connecting you to the sports and pop culture issues you care about and the guests you want to hear more from. Now, here's Carolyn Cameron and Greg Brady.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 5 of Point Taken. We've already entered June. Not that you'd be able to, well, tell.
You can't tell. We've got the studio a little bit dark, too. Just everyone's in that kind of mood. We're already 6 days into June. Very little. The sun came out about 3 minutes between about 8:52 and 8:55
this morning. Oh, it was glorious, yeah.
Did you get a look at it?
No, I didn't. I was sleeping.
Okay, you got to wait till Friday to see it now.
I was walking in. It's what? I think it's 16 degrees today in Toronto. I can check my weather app. But as I was walking in to record the podcast, there was a guy in a balaclava, which is either overkill or he was going to rob a bank.
Oh, so it's covering his face.
Yeah. And he was wearing gloves.
It can be both. He's upset with the weather and needs some quick cash to move on that. That doesn't feel like a very in vogue crime anymore. Like, that's before you had, like, cyber theft and you could hack into someone's bank account. That seemed to be the only way to get cash. Now there's a lot easier ways.
If you need a quick buck.
I had a friend who worked at a movie theater, and he had this elaborate plan. This is when we were in high school, early university. And he had this elaborate plan where he knew how to pull off. He was a very law-abiding guy. He went to law school, and but he had this elaborate plan where he could rob the theater at the end of a Saturday night, in between like the 7 o'clock show and the 9 o'clock show. He knew where all the cash was, and not that he was trying to recruit me as an accomplice. He was just laying it out.
Are you sure?
I think so. I think he was laying it out.
Sounds a little suspect.
Well, listen, I know you're going to play the pure of heart card. Have you ever shoplifted? Ever?
No, I have never shoplifted.
One time.
Never, not once. Cross my heart, hope to die. I honestly never have.
What?
I have a guilt complex. You can ask my coworkers.
You're going to run for office someday, and this is your way of protecting yourself. Because I've taken
really?
Things from stores.
What?
Like my very first theft was a Super Bowl.
My first theft.
When I was like 7, it was in my sock. I had a little Super Bowl. And I was with a friend and his mom. And I don't know. Well, that would have made it worse not to get caught with your parents.
Right.
Because the mom might have been like, just leave him here. We don't know him.
Stay with the cops.
At least had I been with my parents, I could have somehow explained it away. And I think my kids are now past the age where I can go to the grocery store with them or Toys R Us, and they're not going to shove like a Nerf gun in their shirt or something. Like, we'd see that.
I don't even eat food at the grocery store until I've paid for it.
I have not done that recently. I just think how embarrassing, humiliating that would be for someone to come up and go, you know, those chocolate almonds are, you can't, it's not a taste test. you've got to go and pay for them before you can start.
That's
like
why
eating them out of the bag
barn.
And then pretending you brought your own food into a grocery store, like a ball game, nobody would believe it, right? So we got a lot going on. Matt Bonner from X of the San Antonio Spurs is going to join us.
The Red Mamba.
That's right. Started his career with the mighty, mighty Toronto Raptors when they were less than mighty by good fortune. And also, he was somebody that exposed himself as a need to play front court with Tim Duncan and replaced Tim Duncan at different times in a trade. Went to San Antonio and found himself 2 NBA championships richer and beyond the obvious. Says we won't mention this on the air to embarrass him. Or on the podcast, he's made over $30 million American in his career. Like when he goes to the ATM and takes $40 out,
he doesn't
more there
need
than
to
when
rob
you and
a
I
bank.
Doesn't feel that way. So, and some NBA players are robbing banks with their contracts. Matt was a very affordable, unassuming. You know, you wouldn't go, God, why are we paying Matt Bonner so much? I don't feel like you'd never want to say that about Matt Bonner. So he'll join us on the podcast. Talk about the NBA Finals. This is his first year. Actually, second year out of the NBA. So that's the first year is probably hard. We'll ask him if the second year gets easier also, which I would think it would at a certain point in time, right?
Yeah, he's probably enjoying retirement. This is probably an inconvenience for him, having to do work and do an interview.
That's it. But he'll be happy to talk about the NBA Finals, which were, as we record this, we've yet to have a third game. So the series has yet to go to Cleveland. But though we discussed it last week, I think there was hope for... everyone's pointing out, hey, Golden State was up 2-0 last year, and then they were up 3-1, and then they lost the series. And the easy answer to come back with, Carolyn, is yes, but they didn't have Kevin Durant. and they weren't looking so dominant in a playoff series. And they weren't 14-0 in the entire freaking playoffs,
right.
But they are.
Logic tells me that it won't be the same story and that Cleveland's done, but as just a basketball fan, my heart is hoping that Cleveland will at least win one at home.
Or is a sweep fascinating? Is there anything to be fascinating about? Why?
No, because we watched this boring NBA playoffs to get to this great sweep.
It's
we
true.
Don't want that.
I've heard people say, and I've heard people say it about the NHL, until Nashville tied the series and everyone got super excited about, you know, now we've got a 2 out of 3. It's been home ice advantage in 4 games so far. But I heard some, I just want to get to the draft in July 1st.
What?
They're Leaf fans, and they're excited, yeah, right, for the offseason transactions. So they're like, let's speed up time again. But those things will still be there.
Yes.
It's not one or the other, right?
Sit and enjoy it, because in 2 weeks, you're not going to have any hockey to watch.
Correct. And it's a difficult week for, I don't know if it is for you, with late night Blue Jays games.
Yeah.
It's one of my least favorite working weeks. At least there's stuff to talk about, because I don't like the weeks where it's like right after, actually right before Christmas is worse, because you do have the World Juniors. Mm-hmm. So when you work on radio and sports radio, the week before Christmas is bad, and Major League Baseball All-Star Week is terrible now, because all you have is the one game. And though there can be interesting things happen in the All-Star game, you've got a day before, 2 days after, the league doesn't start up again until Friday. But these are tough, because these games go to 1 a.m., and they don't really, you're not living and dying with wins and losses right now for the Blue Jays. You're not.
See, I don't mind watching. I mean, you get up. What time do you normally get
3:45.
To bed?
Well, I get up at 3:45.
Okay.
I'll fall asleep anywhere between 10:30 and midnight.
See, and I go to bed anywhere between 3 a.m. and 4. Mm-hmm. So I don't mind these West Coast games. I mean, this month I'm filling in for Ivanka, so I'm doing the earlier shift. But tonight I'm doing the post-Jay show. So I'm fine watching it, because it gives me something to watch at work. But I just am hoping for no extra innings, knock on substitute wood.
By the way, people would like to know, who are listening, how much FaceTime did you really think you'd get Friday night at the Jays care auction? Because you got a lot.
I know.
You're one of those, you don't need to brag about your charitable endeavors. You just wanted.
Well, I was answering
just want to
phones.
Do them.
I mean,
and
I wasn't doing
no,
that.
No, I know, but you're volunteering your time. You could be anywhere and everywhere on a Friday evening in the biggest city in Canada, and you're there doing the phones. And that's great. And a lot of money got raised for Jays care.
Yeah, over $200,000.
You must have heard from people going, I just saw you. There you are.
Yes.
Now Ivanka's talking to you, and you're like, I know. If I was involved in a conversation 3 minutes ago, I might remember it.
It was so loud in there. So Ivanka Osmak, she was hosting, and I couldn't fully hear what she was saying. And she said, hey, someone's talking to you. Wave
to
the camera.
Oh, that's what happened. I saw
and
that
I
exchange.
And I thought that she was saying someone in the truck. So I thought we weren't on air, and it was a producer wanting to say hi. So I jokingly picked up the phone and then mouthed, I'm not actually talking to anyone.
I saw that
exchange.
Which
ended up going on TV.
That's right.
So then I think Dan and Buck went with that and begged people to call me. Actually, more calls came in. I have to say, though, it ended at the end of the seventh inning. And that last hour, there were tons of calls of people calling in to donate. So thank you, everybody.
Now,
but then Ivanka was teasing me and interviewed me. I'm like, listen, Ivanka, I'm just trying to take some calls.
That's what you were doing, yeah.
And raise some money.
Yeah. She's trying to cross promote and help that be. And then, but people who call then are disappointed they don't get you. They're getting, like, somebody else. They may have. Can they request a certain, you know, donatee?
No, because it's just, I think it's just random, right? It's through the switchboard or something.
That's right. Yeah.
It's very technical.
That would make sense. Now, let me ask you about Buck. Would Buck, I feel like I've talked to Buck 38 times on the phone. I'm not sure he'd recognize me. Do you feel like Buck could say hi to you and know your name? And
oh,
know
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
okay,
I know
that's
Buck.
Good. See, I want that kind of relationship.
You know what? One of my favorite Buck Martinez moments. Do you watch The Bachelor or The Bachelorette?
No, but I know the concept.
Okay.
Is there somebody that he looks like?
No. I say it's the
is
greatest.
Is he the next Bachelor?
No, it's the greatest worst show on TV. Mm-hmm. So a couple of years ago, I was on Breakfast Television in Toronto to promote the Rogers Cup. And Buck was also on that day. So they had us come on for a quick chat segment, and I think we were going to talk about the Blue Jays. But right before we came on camera, there was a promo for Bachelor in Paradise, which is even worse than The Bachelor and Bachelorette in a good way, because it's just all these kind of cast-offs who come together and they see who they can meet.
Okay, this isn't like Love Island or whatever.
It's basically Paradise Island. It's
Paradise
similar
Island?
To that. So Buck out of
Sex
nowhere.
Sex Island is different than Paradise Island, different than Love Island. It gets a little more intense as things go on.
So Buck out of nowhere says, I love that show. I'm not going to attempt a Buck
No, sure. I can hear him saying exactly what you're saying in my own head.
So anyway, the chat just turned into us talking about Bachelor in Paradise, and Buck specifically said that the show is juicy.
Is he accurate in that
that
verbiage?
Completely accurate.
He really is.
So that's one of my favorite Buck Martinez moments.
And you were drop dead shocked that he not only knew what it was, but he saw it and then thirdly claimed to have seen it. Because sometimes we pretend we don't watch these shows.
That is a confident man.
That's very, very confident.
I had that hair, I'd be that confident.
Now, you had a really... So Matt Bonner coming up. We may have some other surprises as well. You had a really unique Sunday in that you start... you were like starting to shotgun tweet Sunday morning during Milos Raonic's round of 16 match.
Right.
Against his Spanish opponent, correct?
Yes. So the plan was, I found out late Friday that if Milos were to win that match, I would then fly to Paris on Sunday and
miss
then
the podcast.
Go to his...
I guess we could have you on the phone.
That's true. And then, and be there for his quarterfinal, which would have been against Rafael Nadal. It was a five-setter, and it looked like he was going to win, so I started packing as I was watching, which was my first of many mistakes.
Now it was a five-set match, so he did lose the first... he won the first set.
Yeah.
Lost the second in a tiebreak, won the third in a tiebreak. When does the packing start?
When's
the jinxing start?
Probably the second or third.
You started jinxing around.
And the thing
is,
I'm very good at pretending that I'm... or thinking that I'm not getting my hopes up, so just acting very calm. And then as the match went on, I was no longer
calm. It's a work trip to Paris. How are you not? You're shaking.
So
you
I haven't unpacked yet, and it's 3 days later. So there's probably something
you're that guy or woman that just sits in a sopping wet uniform by their locker after the loss. And you almost want the media to write about it. You're like, and he was so overcome with emotion, he couldn't take his equipment off after an hour and a half. Everyone else had gone home. But that's how disappointed Sidney Crosby was. He could not make it home.
But then, and I know you go to how many concerts do you go to a year?
Less than ever, but a reasonable amount. But then, I noticed
I got to go to Jack Johnson for the first time ever, so that was fun.
So, you'd been looking forward to that show. You would have had to miss that show to get on to go to Pearson.
I think I would have survived, though.
Because Porter doesn't fly to Paris the last time I checked.
Aren't you going to U2 soon? Is that this month or next month?
2 weeks from this week on a Friday.
Ooh.
So we'll see. I have not purchased the tickets yet. I have an in to purchase them, but I'm certainly not getting comped. I don't think anyone is. I don't think Bono could get comp tickets for his own show at this point. This thing's a money juggernaut. They just announced today new shows in Detroit and Buffalo.
Really?
How did you find the performance? And how long have you liked Jack Johnson?
I've liked him for over a decade.
I know three songs.
Since his first album.
And I only know Upside Down because he does that video with Curious George.
That was a good soundtrack for that movie.
Right. I know that before any other song.
Reduce, Reuse, Recycle is a song.
Now, if someone didn't know him and you took someone that's not more mainstream because Jack's been successful, who would you compare him to? Like, he doesn't sound like John Mayer. That's different, right?
Yeah, that's different. But okay. I think you could put them in a similar category. Jack's from Hawaii. It's very... it's very beachy.
Very bohemian.
Beachy,
but not quite Jimmy Buffett. Genre? Like, you don't feel...
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's just kind of singer-songwriter.
And the demo, because I'll go to shows and they'll be like, wow, I'm young here. Wow, I'm certainly old here. How did you find the demographic of the show? Were there people, older couples, married couples, younger people, anybody bringing kids?
Yeah, there were a lot of kids. And it was...
Really?
I was surprised because it was a school night. But... Yeah, no, age group, a lot of my generation, but a lot of parents too, some grandparents. I was impressed, and it was a very chill crowd. I liked that too. I'm not a big crowd fan.
Could you smell pot?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I would see, again, with a kid's song, I'm like, and I don't have I'm not a moralist when it comes to
George
marijuana.
Curious George was one of his albums.
Well, is the smell what's making him curious in the bit? No, because...
Well, it's a Budweiser stage in the lawn.
That doesn't matter, but they can have anybody there. Yeah, I would assume there's alcohol served, but when it starts smelling like a Steve Miller show or a Grateful Dead show, then I'm surprised a little bit to some extent.
It was a great show.
I have an 11-year-old and 9-year-old. I wouldn't know if they knew what that smell was. I'm eager to find that out if they like, because I like that smell. I'm not a smoker.
Yeah, no, me neither.
Fokker, are you? Yeah, I'm not, but I but I like the smell. Do you like the smell of pot?
I don't mind it. The thing is, though, when I lived in Vancouver for 2 years, I mean, that's just the smell on the streets.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're going for a jog on the seawall at 9 a.m.
Now, it's a cliche. Smell. Have you ever gone to Amsterdam?
No, I haven't.
Then it's just, it's everywhere. And it's inside. It's in your hotel lobbies. You smell it everywhere.
Oh, I don't want that.
Yeah, but that's a bet. I was.
How did we get on this topic?
I know. Well, I was forced by friends to walk through the red light district, and the pot smells better than anything that's happening in the red light district. I don't know. I found Amsterdam to be too dirty a city. Like, I mean that literally. I didn't find it very. All the cigarette butts, and even though people bike everywhere, they're very fitness conscious.
Did you bike everywhere?
I rode a bike in Amsterdam, and that was back in 2000. I think bikes are more, when the Euros run, I think they're more available even now than ever. But so is pot, and so is the red light district, I think, to some extent. So the Paris thing doesn't happen.
No.
And you would have gone until Raonic was eliminated. Quick on the sport front, when you look at the result, I've heard two people... Well, I've heard two opinions. One is, and mine leans more the latter, is that at least he's healthy. The French is never going to be the slam that he wins anyway.
No.
I was disappointed by the loss. There were a ton of errors.
There were a ton of errors. But I think you're right. I mean, I didn't really expect him to get too much further at the French anyway. And again, he would have faced Rafael Nadal, which, I mean, everyone's an underdog when you face him at Roland Garros.
Yes.
But, yeah, no, it was a shame because Raonic really had his opportunities. He then fought off 7 match points, though, in the fifth, which I was impressed by that, but it's kind of too little too late.
And I felt like he didn't care. He was almost like, screw it on the match points. And then he just kept hitting winners.
Yeah.
Like ungettable winners for Corina Busta on
the
match points.
Oh, my gosh. It was a really, you know what? I actually thought it was a bit of a boring match the entire time until the fifth set. The fifth set, we saw some incredible shots. But
yes.
For Milos... Grass court season's here. Well, almost here. Once the French is done, Wimbledon, that's the slam for him to win.
Yeah, and I like, it feels like there's been so much tennis and so much time has taken place. Like, I think people forget. You wake up on that Sunday, and it was the Wimbledon men's final. I remember being in the car driving somewhere, and I had to go full media blackout. I was going to be away, I think, at a rugby tournament, and I was going to make sure I didn't know who won until I got home. And
that's
then I
tough.
Caved. I know. The match had been over for hours.
Ugh.
And about 20 minutes from home, I checked my phone. He lost Andy Murray in straight sets.
Yeah.
Which is to be expected. But you wake up that day, sort of like when Jeannie got to the final, and you're like, this could be like when Mike Wearmel won the Masters. Like, that's momentous to think of a Canadian man or woman winning Wimbledon. And he made the final. Like, he's got points to defend, and he's got getting to the final to defend. But with Federer better, Murray looks healthy. I think Djokovic is a little renewed. We'll see how the rest of his French week goes. Maybe harder to get to the final than last year for Milos, even though that's his surface. And as you said, if he's ever going to win a slam, it's probably is going to be Wimbledon. It really is.
Yeah. Well, and Federer's coming in rested, too, because he didn't play French. But I do think, I don't know, I still think he has an opportunity because Djokovic and Murray have not. I mean, they've been playing well at the French thus far, but they haven't been themselves this year.
Mm-hmm. Well, we got a lot coming up. We'll push some stuff to the back end because we're going to talk to Matt Bonner in a sec. And if we left in all that talk about smoking grass and biking in the red light district, you're lucky. It's just considered a bonus. We left that in for you, the listener. We thought, why edit ourselves, really?
So generous.
At a certain point in time. Our guest now on the line is the former center for the San Antonio Spurs. Again, rather freshly retired and a 2-time NBA champion. He is Matt Bonner. Matt, thanks for coming on with Carolyn and myself. It's obviously an exciting time with the NBA Finals about to wrap up. Where are we talking to you today from?
San Antonio.
Oh, nice.
Stay there. It's like England here.
Yeah, it's
the weather's
awful.
The weather's been horrifying in
Ugh.
May. Rains every day, man.
Well, it's horrible in the opposite direction here because it's like 94 with 90% humidity every day.
I know. Look at us complaining. Like it's 110 somewhere, and that's even worse. And it's snowing.
I think we're each sick of our own prospective climates, and we'd be willing to switch. It'd be like celebrity wife swap where you realize how good you had it.
Underrated show.
Or it's properly
rated.
It could be that. Well, we were mentioning earlier how we talked to ex-athletes, and that first year of retirement is a transition. Has it had its moments? Has it had its even ups and downs? Like, especially when playoffs come, I bet, because training camp can be a slog, and it's an 82-game season, and it's a lot of travel, and checking into hotels at 3 in the morning, and you, especially with the Spurs, a lot of travel throughout the West. But then playoffs come, and it's mid-April, and you see where San Antonio is, and they had another great year, and did you have pangs of going, I absolutely 100% missed this. I wish I was there.
Well, I think most retired athletes have those pangs. I certainly did. The one benefit I had was I kind of went as long as I could, and you know, I didn't leave the game. The game left me, sort of situation. Yeah, you know, I tried to play this season, and I was up in my home state of New Hampshire mostly working out all fall and the beginning of the winter, trying to get on a roster, so that once I reached New Year's and I hadn't gotten on a team, I kind of knew the writing was on the wall, so to say. I knew I was done, so I could walk away knowing I gave the game everything I had. So having that peace of mind was helpful during this transition. However, you're absolutely right. There's times during the game or during the season where you kind of wish you were still out there playing. But, you know, perspective-wise, it happens to everyone. Time to move on.
Well, and you're kind of that generation of the Spurs where there's a lot of players coming near the end of their career. I mean, Tony Parker says he wants to be back by January despite the ankle injury. Manu Ginobili, people are wondering if he'll continue. Did you kind of look around and see where you were too in the roster and sit down with Pop to have that discussion of what's next?
Absolutely. I'm kind of happy it worked out. I retired the same year as Tim Duncan. I rode his coattails long enough. Once he stepped away, I figured it was time for me to as well. But, yeah, you know, I talked to Pop several times throughout the process when I was deciding whether or not to keep grinding and trying to get on a team or hang them up. And I also participated in the Players Association post-career programs. They do multiple really great summer programs. I did the coaching program, the broadcasting program, and the front office management program just to get some experience, see what I liked. In the end, I decided on broadcasting as a lifestyle choice. I have a 7-year-old daughter and a 4-year-old son, and it seemed like that profession was the one that would keep me around the most. You know, I only have to work 3 or 4 nights a week. I didn't really have to travel. So I talked to Coach Pop and the Spurs people to see if I could get a beginner's job with broadcasting with the team, and they gave me that shot. And so that's what I've been doing since I retired.
Yeah. So did Pop give you any advice if you're doing in-game interviews with him and how to get more than one answer from him?
I haven't done any in-game interviews with Pop. It would be interesting how that would go. I'm sure he would find some way to mess with me.
Yeah, probably.
It's one of those scenarios also where I think I watched you come up and you were doing stuff with Matt Devlin on one of the Raptors games, and you must have had people tell you either through interviews or just your interactions with the media that you would be a good fit. Who are broadcasters you watch? And when you were playing, did you go, boy, that guy gets it, that guy does? You don't have to name the names, but did you get that guy certainly gets it, that guy doesn't? Like, and we can get really fooled into thinking who's going to be good. I've watched Chris Webber my whole life as a player, and I go, I don't know. He doesn't give you much in interviews. He's been an amazing broadcaster because he was holding back the whole time, and he lays it all out there. And I love him working with a legend like Marv Albert. Are there guys you look at and you go, well, I sure watch them as a player. I'd like to take something as a broadcaster from them on TV.
Well, definitely the whole inside the NBA crew on TNT. I love how they bring their personalities to the job in humor and pop culture and make it interesting in that way, in addition to being great analysts. Also, I've had a chance to play with a lot of guys who have gone on to retire and become successful broadcasters, such as Brent Berry. We have Sean Elliott, who does the color for the Spurs, who travels with the team. So I got, and he's been a great mentor through this process, just really helping me out, answering questions. I'm pretty good friends with Brian Scalabrine, who does a lot of broadcast work for Comcast up in Boston. And my old coach for the Raptors, Sam Mitchell.
Yeah.
Sure. He's into broadcasting now, so I've had a chance to talk to him several times. So I have enough friends and former colleagues to get the proper support and mentorship, for sure, as I delve further into this exciting career. At least I think it's exciting.
So speaking of TNT, Charles Barkley, I mean, he's infamously said this whole postseason how he's more interested in the Stanley Cup playoffs because at least there's some parity and he doesn't know what's going to happen compared to what's happened leading up to this final and even two games into the NBA finals with Golden State dominating and still being perfect. As a former player and someone who was on one of those dynasty dominant teams with San Antonio, is there a problem in the NBA with parity, or is it good and exciting in your view that you have these two teams who inevitably would meet in the NBA finals again?
See, I find having these two teams who, like you said, would inevitably meet again in the finals a positive more than a negative, just because it's a star-driven league, and when you have teams with so many superstars on each team, you know, they call them super teams. I'd call Golden State a super duper team myself, but they get that much more media attention, that much more coverage, which only elevates their status, which raises the bar for everybody else. And not to mention, if you're one of the teams that's not the Cavs or the Warriors, how much harder are you working in the off season to get better, to come back next year so you can try to compete with those guys? I just think it raises the bar across the board. It draws more attention and coverage for the league, for the teams, for the stars, which to me is only a good thing. Everybody roots for the underdog, right? So I think everybody's waiting for someone to knock the Cavs off in the East and someone to knock the Warriors off, period. That was arguably the biggest sports story of the year last year when the Cavs had that huge upset, came back from 3-1 and knocked off the Warriors in the finals. So I think people like those storylines. They're engaged in them. And as long as it continues that way, everybody else is going to fight to get better, to try to compete.
Matt Bonner's joining us, of course, from San Antonio, Texas. Two NBA rings with the Spurs on the Sportsnet Point Taken podcast with Carolyn Cameron and myself, Greg Brady. Did you look at your two Raptors years? I'm sure you've been asked this on Toronto radio stations, kind of there at a low ebb with a really young Chris Bosh, with Sam as coach. And it's hard, like you said at the start of the interview, it's hard to want more than you had. Amazing opportunity, playing with Hall of Famers, amazingly passionate fans, and a lot of long playoff runs. But the last three or four years with the Raptors, do you look and go, of course it would have been fun to be part of it and winning series? Like, these were all, they were pipe dreams for the Raptors, hell, 4 years ago, not 14 years ago. And like I said, you were there at still what felt like either a building era or something that was a real struggle to build at that point in time.
That's a good point. You know, for me personally, I thought being on those two Raptors teams my first 2 years in the NBA were important and really a lucky break, because I was a rookie and a second year player on a team where I could play, you know, 20, 25 minutes a night, every single night, and get that experience and develop my game. And also I got to play with a guy who to me is one of like the OG stretch fours in Donyell Marshall, and kind of learn from him and figure out how to carve a niche in this league as a stretch four and have a long career. And you're right about the fans in the city, just amazing, great fans. Even, you know, we'd win like 30 games, but they'd still almost sell out every game and come cheer us on. So when they started winning, I was very happy and excited. I still follow the Raptors very closely, know a lot of people that work in the organization, cheer them on. If anything, just for the fans, they deserve a winning team.
When people watch Spurs games, I mean, they're watching for the great team and the great basketball, but they're also kind of watching for the sideshow that is Greg Popovich. I mean, you've known him for years and were coached by him for years. Is there more to him than what we see, or is he kind of that strong-headed guy who isn't afraid to speak his mind all the time?
There's so much more than what people typically see in the media during those interviews or whatever. He, first of all, you don't see much because he really shies away from the spotlight, could care less, doesn't do hardly any interviews, if ever. So people don't really have much to go on besides what they see on TV. And you're right, he speaks his mind. He can be grumpy, but that's the tip of the iceberg. He's just one of the greatest guys I've ever been around, one of the nicest guys, generous and incredibly educated, well-read, worldly, smart, wise. It was an honor to be around him so much for the last 10 years and learn from him.
There's a lot of talk about the one-and-done rule. I heard an interview with Adam Silver last week say, you know, maybe in the case of Fultz this year and Ball and last year with Ben Simmons, that it's maybe it's not helping college basketball, and maybe it's not helping us either. You were in the draft in 2003 after a full career at Florida, very good program, and that's the LeBron draft. So LeBron goes number one as a high school kid. It would have been kind of silly now in retrospect for us to say to LeBron James, hey, go play a year at Georgetown or Kentucky or Kansas, like we've done with the Andrew Wiggins and whatnot. Do you look and say, through my experience at college and my entire pro career, I have a really firm grasp that we either need to do more with the D League, or guys do need to go to college first? How do you view it?
Well, I think the latter part of your question, the league is doing more with the D League. With the new CBA that kicks in next year, I believe they're adding two roster spots to each team, for, I guess, swing players, kind of like hockey, who can go back and forth to the D League, which would have been nice this season to have 60 extra roster spots in the league for myself, but but that's okay. So right there alone.
Then you're a year behind on broadcasting, though. You're a year ahead on broadcasting. You'd have to start fresh
true.
This year.
That's true. That is true. Way to find the silver lining. Thank you.
Yeah, anytime.
But,
sure.
But back to my point, you're adding two, you know, NBA roster contract spots that can play in the D League and develop. I know the CBA also made tweaks to make it easier for teams to keep their star players, so that if you do develop your homegrown talent in the D League, you have a better chance at keeping them as opposed to them taking a huge payday somewhere else. I know they're raising D League salaries to keep guys domestic as opposed to trying to go play overseas or in China. So I think those steps are being taken. And I think every team's going to have a D League affiliate in the next few years. So I think that development farm system steps are being taken. As far as should players have to go to college for a year? I don't think so. I don't see what the point is. They're not getting an education. They're going to the NBA anyway. You're just giving them a year to risk getting injured and hurting their stock and being able to have that once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to take care of their family and future children for generations to come. And they could get the same development in the D-League as opposed to in college. I know the league and the Players Association is doing more, you know, kind of people say, well, they're not mature enough off the court to be able to handle the transition. And I mean, I would argue that's true if it's almost equally true if you go to 1 year of college or you just come out of high school. And the league and the Players Association does a lot off the court support to try to get guys ready with it for that transition. So, I mean, I don't see what the point is. When guys were coming out of high school, I didn't think it was a huge problem. Most of the players who did come out of high school turned into some of the biggest stars we had in the league.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I feel about it.
And great. But, yeah, like I'd mentioned LeBron. I'd mentioned Kevin Garnett, the great representatives. And no, it's not going to work for everybody. I mean, we all maybe in Canada, too, as you could relate, we would never say, hey, Connor McDavid, you know what you need? Like a year of college hockey or three or more years of junior hockey. If you are 18... And I'd say this for non-sports. There are computer science kids so smart, they get pulled out of MIT halfway through their second year, or Yale, and they get hired by Google, or they get hired by Apple. Like, what? There's no rules about them. And then the obvious one, we send kids into war who are 19, right?
Yeah. And not to mention baseball. Baseball, you don't have to go to college. If you come from Europe, most of those guys play for club teams until they're eligible. They don't go to college, so... It just seems like a kind of unfair rule, in my opinion.
Yeah, but you got your education. You're a two-time academic All-American. You should think twice about broadcasting. You've got the high GPA.
Someone Googled me. Someone
yeah,
Googled
I know.
Me.
There you go. Yeah, did you fudge your 3.96 GPA on your Wikipedia page?
I did not.
Oh, okay.
Is that what it says?
That's what it says. And Wikipedia is always right.
You never know what it'll say. You never know what someone will write in.
It'll be a 4.0 by the end of this recording.
I tell players in high school, my 4 years of college at the University of Florida were like the four funnest years of my life. So there's pros and cons to whatever you decide. But, I mean, if someone put $20 million in front of me, would I still go to college? Probably not.
Me neither.
With the raw honesty. Now, what if it was $1 million? We got to get them the number where you'd say no. We'll get there at some point in time. Matt Bonner, $50, exactly. Whatever the tuition is, and a meal plan. Matt Bonner's joining us from the San Antonio Spurs. We're talking obviously about the LeBron and what he's going through in Cleveland right now. I mean, the most shocked I've been in a LeBron final. It wasn't even the first one against Dallas, because sometimes series just happen and Dallas was clicking. They made their shots. Nowitzki had a great series and they had a great plan to coach against him. But your series against him in 14, it did get out of hand. The wins you had, I mean, 19 points, 21 points, and 17 points were the last three margins of victory. What do you remember about that series when it's 1-1 and you're going back to Miami and they are the two-time defending champs?
Well, that's an example of kind of what we were talking about earlier, where I think the whole country was rooting for us because we were the underdog. We had the heartbreaking loss the year before in 2013. They were the Heatles, the super team, supposed to be unbeatable, and everybody wanted to see us get back to the finals and get revenge from the year before. And honestly, I mean, we were so focused. That was the worst. Game 6 of the 2013 finals when Ray Allen hit that shot to go into overtime and they beat us in overtime was the worst loss, most horrible loss I've ever been a part of in my basketball career. We were up 6 with like 30 seconds left. They had the trophy right there on the court. All our family was behind the bench. They were giving them post-game passes and celebration passes. You know, the game was over. We had a championship, and then next thing you know, we missed some free throws. They hit 2-3, some offensive rebounds, and the game's going into overtime, and we end up losing. So that was a tough pill to swallow, something that we knew would eat at us unless we righted that wrong the following year. So we were on a mission. We were like the Blues Brothers. We were on a mission from God that next season to come back and get back to the finals. And once we got there, you saw the result. We just steamrolled the Heat, basically, in that series.
Is LeBron the hardest player you've ever played against?
Yes, I would say so. I mean, I remember one time he was – I don't know. I was the trail big, and something happened, and the ball came the other way. So because I was the trail big, I was, like, the first one back on defense. So it was, like, one-on-one, me and LeBron, and everybody's – heard all the analogies when he's got a full head of steam coming downhill in transition. So I was like, you know what? I'm not even going to try to guard him. I'm just going to basically try to tackle him and make him make free throws. So he comes dribbling in. He gets to the foul line, and I literally grab him like Bill Goldberg, the wrestler style, and just wrap him up and try to take him down. And somehow, like through me hanging on to him with all my strength, he still takes two more steps, gets to the hoop, and like flips the ball up and gets it in and gets an and one. And I just remember feeling so helpless in that situation.
So he's okay with the lack of parity in the NBA. He likes the Warriors and Cavs being dominant. See, I'm kind of on the fence about it. I want these great teams, but I don't want that level of dominance where it's just an obvious that they're going to meet.
Well, and he was on a dominant team, but he's not wrong in that a lot of these teams went out, did their own work. They've done their own thing. They haven't. Tim Duncan, yes, he falls in your lap as a number one overall pick, and you're not going to take him. But at the same time, Manu Ginobili's a second rounder.
Mm-hmm.
Kawhi Leonard's late in the first round.
Oh, their draft history's amazing.
Golden State's the same team. There's no top five picks of their own. Steph Curry is 7. Klay Thompson's, I think the Minnesota Timberwolves drafted 2 players back-to-back ahead of Steph Curry, and they drafted at least 1, maybe 2. A bunch of teams did. skipping Klay Thompson. Yeah. So, yes, Kevin Durant says, looks at what LeBron did in 2010 and says, it's worked for him. I want to do that. I want to play with the best players and I want to be with the best people. And wouldn't you say with sports, with any other walk of life, it's really hard. It's hard to call that out. The only time we do it, I think, in anything but sports is when you either leave a place too soon. Like, let's say you got called to you get hired by NBC. Okay. NBC hires you away from Sportsnet, and then for you to leave NBC after a month or two for another company isn't seen as that's not a good look for you.
Right.
Unless they absolutely laid something out and you weren't comfortable with it, or the contract terms changed, or they tried to force a bunch of contractual issues on you that weren't there before, and you said, I'm being treated really unfairly, I'm out of here. But with sports, like if an alien came down from another planet and said, hey, where do you earthlings work? And we're like, kind of where the jobs are and where we have to. Oh, except for pro sports, where a random city, usually the worst city, takes the best player and says, you have to play here or you can't play anywhere else. So when you get, like when I was a kid, John Elway did this and said, I don't want to play for the Baltimore Colts. Eli Manning said he didn't want to play for the San Diego Chargers. Eric Lindros didn't want to play for Quebec. So it doesn't happen that often. But for the players to do this, Kevin Durant plays in Seattle, then Oklahoma City. LeBron James plays in Cleveland. And after enough time of fired coaches and botched draft picks and bad management, and they don't trust the owner, if all those are the case, I'm for freedom. I'm like, yes, move. You only have a short shelf life here, right?
I just don't like the predictability. It's too predictable. And that's why I love the NHL playoffs, because you have no idea what could happen. Even in the first round, there can be upsets. And even now in the cup final, you have Nashville, who everyone thinks after the first two games in Pittsburgh that they're done, and they're not. And they've tied it up. And now people are saying, how the heck's Pittsburgh going to score in Pekka-Rinne? It's the complete opposite storyline as last time. And I like that.
I think there's a fine line. And I think the harder salary cap system, and there's no luxury tax like in basketball, and there's less reliance on individuals. Sidney Crosby played a great Game 4, mm-hmm. and probably was the best player on the ice, as he often is. If it's not him, it's Malkin, and they can't win.
No.
Now,
it's him or bust.
Right, and if I were to tell you that this is the first team in the playoffs in ages LeBron James would run into where you could make the case he was the best player in Game 1, but it's not good enough because there are four players playing better and getting better results than any of his teammates. And that was certainly the case in Game 2, and Kyrie Irving didn't have a good game. So I think you're right, and I lean your way. I'd rather have it be unpredictable. And if anything, I think it's kind of weird that everyone says, well, there's no parity because no teams repeated since 97 and 98 with Detroit. Yet you know who the good franchises are. You know Chicago's smart. You know Pittsburgh is. You know Boston has been. L.A. won two cups on a nice five-year window of a run. So it's not a coincidence that, Carolina's a bad example, but recently Carolina's made the playoffs in forever, and Edmonton kept screwing things up, and we'd agree probably now. Vancouver, great window to win. Now it's a lot of trouble.
Struggling.
There's going to be some pain and
there's a I think problems. There's just a happy medium that we need to find. And right now the NBA hasn't found that happy medium, and the NHL has. Cuz you still have those good teams. You know the Blackhawks will show up. You know the Penguins will show up despite the Blackhawks' early exit this year.
Yeah, despite that. But it is getting to that point. Now, there's a story I only thought about this briefly last night when Nashville was cruising right after they made it 3-1 on the Arvidsson goal.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, is there any Nashville? Now, maybe they're too caught up in it. They're just, it's tunnel vision, and all they can focus on is the next shift, the next period, the next game. But I wondered, is there a Nashville player, and they'd never say it, that is so tired of people talking about the city and the country music and the fans.
But the fans,
and the
Greg,
yellow.
The fans.
I know.
The crowd.
That it's just that, like, Hugh Burrell said on our show today on Brady and Price, he said, well, it's the best hockey market in the league right now. And I'm going, I feel like we'd do that in Toronto. Of course we would. I feel like Vancouver would do that again. Look at the red mile in Calgary. It's surprising, but it's been a good market. And I think now we're overrating the market because we feel so bad that some people thought it wasn't a good market. I think we're almost overdoing it.
Yeah, we're overcompensating, I think. But, I mean, Hugh has a point, because at this very moment, I think you could say it's the greatest hockey market because their team is in the Stanley Cup final. But I feel like I'm in part to blame of this hyping Nashville. Because I think on the podcast, we could play it back later.
Uh-huh.
I think I was on here being like, oh, I can't wait to go to Nashville.
No, you'd love to go. That's
this
right.
Crowd, and this crowd's awesome. I can't believe these fans. And I'm with you. I'm tired of, it's like, enough.
So a player might say, you know, we're a good team, and we're the players. They'd never say it.
No.
We're the players, and we're playing, so we don't want to get credit like the fans are winning our games for us. We're good. We proved we were good. We swept Chicago. We pounded St. Louis. We're almost better than we're being given credit for. They were 12-4 in the three rounds leading up to this. They got through a lot easier than Pittsburgh did against Ottawa and Washington, where those teams pushed the Penguins to the brink in those series.
But then things keep happening in Nashville, too, that pushes the fans to the forefront, like the catfish. And then there was a catfish last night in Game 4 that was dressed in a blue top hat.
I saw that.
And then did you see post-game, there's some local media trying to do a live hit outside, and there's this guy in a helmet making out with some girl right in his live shot.
That was happening,
yeah. Oh, my gosh.
But is that comparable to the make-out couple in Vancouver at the riots? I mean, they became famous.
Well, that became art, that photograph. But I just mean, Nashville, there's just so many things that add to the storyline.
I feel like the Canuck couple may not be together still.
No?
It's been 6 years.
That's a good
point. It's a lot of ups and downs.
Oprah should do a Where Are They Now?
A lot of ups and downs that can happen in a relationship, all told. So
they're our next podcast guests.
I'd say that's a reasonable. If we get one, we get the other. Whether
right.
they've been broken
well,
up or
depends.
Not,
depends.
It does depend a great deal. So in lieu of anything else, we always end the podcast, and we thank Matt Bonner for being on. In lieu of anything else, we always end with what
up with that.
Oh, okay. I
oh,
see. What
yeah,
doing.
No, it's okay. So that has been agreed upon with that name.
Yep, it's gonna happen, and it's moving forward.
I won. There's the music. Okay, you ready?
Sure.
Here's the first.
How many stories today?
Well,
I like when
we'll
there's
see
a
how
lot.
Far we get. Oh yeah.
I think we only got three in last week. And
no
then,
pressure.
It got to us that we were maybe exhausting our listeners' capacity.
Okay, so NBA Commissioner Adam Silver apparently has a secret Twitter account, just so he can follow along with what's going on. And people are thinking this is really cool. Is this cool? I don't think this is a surprise at all. It's not like he's tweeting his opinions on The Bachelor and Bachelorette.
What if he is? And not just that, what if he's tweeting his real account and saying, great job, Commish. You're the best commish in all of sports. Like, okay, like Gary Bettman has actually a real Twitter.
Right.
Do you think he has a...
Because
unfortunately for Gary Bettman, there's an awful lot of parody accounts. I'm not even going to read you some of the names, but he's at Commissioner NHL. And it doesn't look like he's tweeted in a long, long time. He's only 106 followers. So I think he's given it up.
The only reason you would have to have a secret Twitter account is if you so desperately wanted to share your opinions with everyone, whether they're listening or not. What's the point? Who cares?
So there are... people in our business, the esteemed Stephen Brunt is well known around these halls for not having a Twitter account.
That's true.
Do you assume he just logs on to read stuff? Like as a news feed, even you and I could not tweet for maybe a week. And maybe some people would say, please, will you do that for me? And but they might say that. And I'd go, well, I do use it as an information source. It helps prepare the show or what we're going to talk about on the podcast. I'd miss that aspect of it, but I could live without the... typing myself, I
completely agree. Oh, yeah, I use it as my newsfeed. I look at it multiple times a day. Maybe Brunt, he's one of these hecklers on Twitter secretly.
It would be weird if you just saw Stephen Brunt. It was like an egg with three followers.
Yeah, you can never trust the eggs on Twitter.
So I don't know. Adam Silver has a real account, but a NBA fan feels like they've exposed his fake account.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying.
I also want to know what NBA fan spent all night trying to find his fake account. I mean, I feel like there's better things to do. Not to sound judgmental.
Yeah. Oh,
which means I do sound judgmental.
The account, I see what the account I'm seeing, the story has two followers and it does have the default egg avatar created in March of 2008. And it's at Milton Point, which I guess is a neighborhood of where he's from in New York State.
Right.
So they've done a lot of detective work. That person should be a detective.
Again, my issue with Twitter, and again, we use it for work, but I just don't understand why everyone needs to hear your opinion about everything.
Why are you looking at me like that?
No, I'm not. As I was saying that, I was looking at my screen. I was avoiding eye contact.
Okay. That makes perfect perfect sense. By the way, will you go see Wonder Woman? I just thought about asking you that. And I meant that. It made $103 million.
I hear it's supposed to be quite good. Yeah. Yeah, maybe I will go see it.
Do you think, does that make any difference that it's a female empowering superhero that kicks ass?
Yeah, I support that, and I think it's good for young girls to see that, but it doesn't influence me of whether or not I'll see the movie. I do like action movies. I love superhero movies. Superman's my favorite.
I've heard from younger women who Lara Croft did when Angelina Jolie played Lara Croft. That was that's a big deal, not to just have Harrison Ford do it for a 58th time.
I think it's a bigger deal though when you see these Disney movies like Brave, for instance, where it's strong, young female leads for young girls to watch.
That's a good point.
It's a good movie,
point.
Brave. Oh, I love Disney. Anyway, back to Twitter. So Justin Bieber took to Twitter last night, and I just want to give this a direct quote, okay? Because he was seen, or he Instagrammed a picture of him wearing a Pittsburgh Penguins jersey, so people thought, okay, he must be cheering for them in the Cup Final, even though he's a Leafs fan, and people were getting on him saying, you can't wear a Pens jersey when you're a Leafs
That's
fan.
Right. Now he was
You're
at
a traitor.
He was at a Leafs Caps playoff game, and they put him on the Jumbotron. I was at that game.
So he tweeted, quote, I don't know enough about sports to really have valid opinion, but I do enjoy sports and enjoy any high-level sports game, any team. And yes, this is broken English. He then said, I support all sports. I'll put any jersey on from any pro team. If I'm whack for wearing jerseys, then give me out of love, then I'm whack.
That's really spreading yourself wide to embrace all sports, bullfighting. Fly fishing, and he'll wear any jersey from any league. That just seems like an open, not to a cry for help, but a cry for jerseys and sweaters to be sent to Justin Bieber's Bel Air condominium.
Yeah. Are you a jersey guy? Do you wear a lot of jerseys?
I don't know. I was thinking, I don't wear them anywhere anymore.
No.
I don't, and I don't own that many. I haven't collected them. I'm trying to, toques. You know what I like? I like toques with team logos on them because I feel you have to wear a toque in the winter when it's freezing and you're walking somewhere
practical,
outside.
Right.
But I don't find a sweater, like a hockey sweater especially. But wouldn't you agree? I think guys look the worst in NBA. Some guys cannot pull off the NBA jersey. There's a lot of bare shoulder involved.
Yeah.
You don't want that.
Not to sound rude, but everyone gets to a certain age where you do not need to be showing up somewhere in a basketball jersey if you're not there to play basketball.
Yes, and if you are there to play basketball, you may also be in the wrong place if you're
true.
Too old
That's
and trying
too.
To join a pickup game.
It's a hard look to pull off, a basketball jersey.
And if you're going with the Patrick Ewing t-shirt underneath, it's even more awkward. It's just arms.
Can you imagine if I just rolled into work next week wearing Vince Carter jersey?
Who at Sportsnet, I'm trying to think of people I've seen around the building because they'll have those days where it's like, hey, wear your favorite team's jersey. Bring the and people do that with the Jays.
People down on the highlight row.
I have bosses that
row.
Will wear a Jays shirt,
jersey.
And that's fine.
Well,
baseball
and that's
way easier to pull off.
Yeah, that's like a button up. A lot of guys down the highlight row, though, in our newsroom, they'll wear different jerseys, different hats.
Like I think the baseball jersey's the easiest to pull off. Football has that. Football doesn't look quite right to me. You should be going to a game, but I think baseball you can pull off going to the bar to watch the Blue Jays or watch baseball. Basketball and hockey are a lot harder for different reasons. Too much coverage, not enough coverage.
Another pet peeve of mine is at tennis tournaments when people go in full tennis outfits. Not playing.
What about golf with the spikes? You know they do that.
Why?
Especially wear golf shoes at golf
that's
events.
That's not necessary.
Yeah, I get their argument is they're climbing up hills, but they're not playing out of the sand. They don't have a pitching wedge with them.
My late grandfather, when he was in his 90s, was going for morning walks on the golf course, and he could handle it without spikes.
With just runners.
So if he could have done it, you could do it.
Trying to solve men's fashion problems one terrible decision at a time.
Another thing from this Justin Bieber Twitter, whatever you want to call it, and this maybe we can count this as our third story.
Yeah.
Is that he said whack twice, and is whack back in our vocabulary, and is it spelled WHACK?
I've never, the H is a, if you use an H as a verb, It's not an adjective, which he's using it as. That's the, like, whack is short for wacky. A whack is something you'd give to, like, a horse.
Yeah.
If it was if it was acting up, if it was eating all your apples. I don't know.
See, my friends make fun of me because I say white. I pronounce the H. I don't do it in other things like where that, but whack I might.
By the way, as an aside, Bieber's 23, and it feels like he's been around for 23 years. He's had a long go of it. I don't wish ill upon anybody in their careers, but my God, it feels like I was going to say he'd be like 29. He's 23.
He's been
drinking legally in the States for 2 years, if you believe that.
Right,
I feel like
legally.
It might have been earlier.
Legally. Yeah. Also, I mean, let's just proofread our tweets, everybody. I think that's the moral of the story. If you learned anything from this podcast, please just be careful what you tweet.
There's a way to do that.
Tweet and proofread.
Was that it?
Yeah. Is that good for now?
I always wanted to go on longer.
More?
But then, like I said, it's people can only...
You can't force it, right?
They can only be stuck in traffic for so long before the episode ends. And they're like, will you guys just talk to us next week? We can't handle... 80 minutes might be too long for the average
human being. So next week I'm in Vancouver. We'll figure out if I call in or if you'll do it solo or...
Something will happen.
Something will happen.
That's right.
Could be a cross-country edition, though, of the podcast.
That's right. And we're ways away from July 1st. But we'll announce some guests later in the month leading up to the Canada 150 celebration.
Oh, yeah. We need to do something special for that.
Hope so. Thank you very much for listening. Matt Bonner was fantastic. He was very, very good with us, with his time and energy. And we will see you next week.
Bye, everyone.
You've been listening to Point Taken with Carolyn Cameron and Greg Brady on sportsnet.ca/590.